Christmas.
Well, it was Christmas down here in South Louisiana. Hello, everyone. As usual, it is the Supernatural Substation. A little bit late tonight, but we are here. I'm Aline Stenio, and waiting in the peanut gallery over there is Bernadine LeBlanc. Say hello, Bernadine.
Hello, everybody. Hope you're having a good holiday season.
And today, we all made national news down here because we had snow. Snow in Louisiana, in South Louisiana. That's unusual. So
that's
I woke up. That's a
rarity.
It is. There have been a couple in my lifetime, but this is kind of reminiscent of one when I was like, I think 3 years old. You know, and I have pictures to prove it, that it was really thick, and, you know, pictures of us in City Park and everything. So this was really unusual. We had, I don't know why people are saying, oh, it was light, because it was a few inches deep on the cars here. So, but it was fun. It is fun. It's still hanging out there, but there's a lot of dripping going on. So, of course, and you know what this means, Bernadine? On Christmas, it'll be 82 degrees because that's what happens.
Flip-flops and shorts for Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't push it back a little bit and make us actually, you know, get a white Christmas and, you know, whatever, which is part of what we're going to be talking about tonight. We had a change in our guest. We'll be bringing her back. I'm sure we'll reschedule with her. So we decided 'tis the season, and we were going to talk about Christmas and some of the legends and haunts and ghosts and things that happen around this particular season of the year. And so, Dean, I know you sent me a link, and I don't know if you want to get started with something that you sent me or go right ahead if you want to lead off.
Well, it's from the Supernatural magazine,
mm-hmm.
and it's called The Dark Side of Christmas, Krampus and Other Christmas Ghost Stories. Well, I'm not sure who Krampus is. Like, I'm just learning about him, so I really don't know who he is.
You know, that's interesting that you should say that, because,
Why? Well,
even though he's really like, let me see, how do I want to say it? He's really like, sort of like related to that whole group of like woodland gods type thing, or at least that's how he's depicted and everything. Mm-hmm. It's really exploded. Like in the last several years or the last few years, it's Krampus, 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 whatever you want to say it. It's all over the damn place. Okay. I mean, and supposedly this thing has been with us since St. Nicholas. Okay. But, and it's been there probably, but it's like, what is all this Krampus crap?
And he kind of looks like in the photographs, the old hag. When I first heard of Krampus, I seen it was a show on TV, a Christmas mm-hmm. show. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, who the hell is Krampus? So maybe you could explain to us, you know, who he is and how he got started.
Who he is. Oh, gosh. He is sort of, he's like an archetype. Okay, let's say the woodland god. You have to kind of go back into the folk beliefs of Europe, particularly the Germans. And this is not surprising, right? Because the Germans, hang on, drop my little microphone. The Germans are the ones that gave us Grimm's fairy tales and all the really creepy, you know, the really creepy fairy tales that got cleaned up before they made it across the Atlantic to us. But it seems like that at least by the 16th century, he was known in the form that he is, and he was connected to Christmas. But prior to that, reading just a little bit about him, he has the horns, he has the cloven hooves, you know, fur all over, or like a skirt of fur with a chest beard, and it's all renditions of the horn god, or Herne the Hunter, or, you know, the god of the supposed old religion that persisted underneath, you know, the facade of Christianity, and that Christianity replaced. Schools of thought are out on that, whether there really was an organized religion, but there have always been creatures of the forest. And so this one sort of like, you know, is grouped in that bunch. That's sort of the wild man, the, you know, the wild man of the hunt, the hunter and the you know, the winter hunter and all this other stuff. So, and Christianity came along and kind of scooped him up and basically turned him around to represent the devil. And by the time we hit the 1800s, the late 1700s, early 1800s, we've got St. Nicholas or Santa Claus that we call, you know, that we know as Santa Claus. And this guy, St. Nicholas, gets all the nice ones, you get everything. And then, you know, you get all, if you're nice all year, you get your toys and whatever. And if you've been bad, you know, you could get coal, you could get nothing. Or if you were really bad, Krampus came and got you and took you away. And if you just search images on Google, you know, it's like bags of children, buckets of children, and he's literally taking them away.
Yeah, it says he has an old burlap sack in his right hand mm-hmm. with a bundle of branches, and in his left hand yeah. with claws and chain line, tiny rusted brass bells.
Brass bells, yeah, that come. And if you, there's a movie. There was a movie made a couple of years ago, a few years ago, and it's on somewhere on cable right now. But it's all about Krampus and, you know, him coming in the winter, destroying the houses and whatever else that he does to get to the children. It's really amped up. But come on, how old are we, right? And we've been looking at, you know, I mean, I've been looking at folklore and legend and all that. And he was sort of a marginal thing for the rest of the world. It was really sort of a Bavarian and German. Austria and Germany really had it, where they even had parades. And during medieval times, they had, you know, the mummers plays and stuff where they had characters that were like this, but weren't called necessarily by that name. They just represented other things. But once, I guess, he graduated into hitching a ride into the Christian faith, then he became a little bit more known and a little bit more famous. So all that you see of like the pictures that really comes from northern central Europe. So there, he's really well known there, where, you know, whereas like France or England, and England is who we really need to thank for the Christmases that we have right now, which I'll explain a little bit later, but it's sort of like, you know, they kind of took that, this monstrosity out and just said, you'll get a lump of coal, you know, I mean, because honestly, that's pretty scary. You know, it's a pretty scary thing to show a kid, you know, right. If you're not good, this is coming for you, you know? And so
yeah, you either get Santa or you get Krampus. So make your choice,
you know, Europe, what do you say? I mean, it's like, yeah, scare all the kids, you know? But as far as popular, it's just been, and I can't, you know, honestly, I'll have to say, I can't stand it. It's like people will do that instead. They'll put up Krampus and all this other stuff. And I'm just tired of it. I'm over this, because he doesn't represent anything good. And I can't say he doesn't belong in the Christmas celebrations, because this is the darkest part of the year that we're in. So I can't say that, but all of this, you know, Facebook and parades and, oh my God, it's like, you know, I'm over Krampus already. But I don't know. What do you think? I don't want him at my house.
No. I mean, I could probably imagine who would decorate their house with the Krampus and the evil, you know?
I know at least three people right off the top.
Seriously, probably people without children, but you know, yeah. Still, you know, it's not something, it's not like a Halloween deal. Like we want to be scared. Mm. Christmas shouldn't be about the dark side of Christmas. There is a dark side, I'm sure, you know, people have hard times, but I mean, not, he kind of looks like a devil type person, you know, mm-hmm. Like remember how we had the Zozo deal.
Yeah.
I feel like if people are going to push Krampus, we may end up with something looking like that, that we have to worry about.
There probably is already. In fact, let me revise that and say there really is something out there. Okay. And the people that subscribe to this believe that there was some, you know, older elder faith or something, or elder religion that Christianity replaced, which is paganism. And there really is a horn god, and he just comes, he's expressed in different forms by the people who are practicing. In Greece, he's something else. They see him as Pan, okay, the great god Pan. In Europe, he's synonymous with the horn god, or this thing, you know, this goated cloven hoof, the whole thing. It's pretty across the board. The look is pretty much the same. It's just what he is and what he represents. So it was always there. And it's just interesting, of all the things that, and, you know, of all the things that we could pick up, that people could pick up and popularize, that they would do this. But the other thing is, you know, the Germans are pretty dark. I mean, seriously, okay, they're the ones with Hansel and Gretel. And, you know, and if you read the original Grimm's fairy tales, they are nothing like they've been Disneyfied and, you know, reworked to be. They are, some of them are terrible. Cinderella is especially terrible. You know, when the mother of Cinderella is killed and cut to pieces and buried under a tree, and Cinderella goes and weeps to her, and actually it's the mother spirit who's like the godmother. Oh, I mean, horrible. Hansel and Gretel, I mean, they throw this woman into a fire, but before then, you know, she's ready to tell them everything she's going to do to them. It's really dark in Germany. Like, you know,
wow.
You know,
don't know if I want to visit that place.
You know, they're either like really, you know, like Oktoberfest and all this, you know, I mean, remember they gave us Hitler. Okay. I mean, so yeah. There's some really austere, sort of, ancient folk belief that's still there. And of course, I mean, it kind of lapses over the Nordic religions and the Nordic pagans, the pantheon of pagan gods and stuff. And even Odin, who is like the god, father god, and people probably know it from the movie Thor now. You know, it's like learn your old Norse, you know, pantheon through Thor in Hollywood. But, you know, Odin and Saint Nicholas are all, there's a similarity, or there's a synchronicity where he translates. And Saint Nicholas himself, Santa Claus, the Sinterklaas we actually got from the Dutch. So all of these things were brought over to America, you know, and a lot of it was marginalized by the church, all churches, and especially the Christian church, because bringing in the Yule log, bringing in the greenery, the Christmas tree, all of that was like poo-pooed by the church because it was pagan. They thought it to be, you know, pagan. And so for a long time, you know, with the Protestants ruling, you know, large portions of Europe, et cetera, all this stuff was suppressed for a very long time. It was the British, actually. And this is why we get God Rest You Merry Gentlemen and Christmas Carol, you know, Charles Dickens, you know, the fantastic history of that. And then we get the traditions of ghost tales and telling ghost stories at Christmas, because the British, during the Victorian era, or right before that, they decided to revive old traditions. They were feeling, I guess, like a sentimentality as a nation or whatever, and they revived a lot of the old Christmas traditions, and it's them we have to thank for the Christmas we have today. Like, why do people think of white Christmas? It's because it snows in England. not everywhere all the time, but Christmas and snow are synonymous in England, and so, you know, it's a truly British thing. I've always said I wanted to go to England at Christmas and have like this Dickensian Christmas, you know, the Christmas Carol and all. But when you start peeling away the surface beyond the tree and all the little festive and bright stuff, there really is still like a dark, there's a dark heart underneath, and all of this. This is the season of the brightest light, okay, but it's also the dark heart of the year, which people knew, you know, for decades and eons, as, you know, winter was hard, especially back in the day where there was no electricity, and, you know, you went inside when the sun went down and you didn't come back out until it came up, you know. So, and in the winter, you couldn't get anything done. I mean, you know, so it was just a dark time of the year.
The only thing I used to think of the dark side of the Christmas was Scrooge. Because we'd see that along with the Christmas, you know, stories on TV. Scrooge. Now we have Jim
I have.
Carrey as what is it?
He was
The
Scrooge. He was the
Grinch.
Grinch.
The Grinch. So we have some dark things, but now we have Krampus along with all that.
It's I don't know. You know, it's like I really don't. I see the Krampus thing, and I'm just like, okay, everybody, whatever's into it. But I really don't like it because I don't feel like it's a time to be glorifying anything like that. Okay, that's
He
enough.
kind of looks demonic.
Well, yeah, he does. He does. And some people say, oh no, well, that's just the horned god and all this, Well, you'll shit your pants when the horned god really shows up, I mean, you
Down
got
your
all these
chimney.
people running around going, oh, it's the horned god and the goddess and all. Yeah, okay. When he shows up, according to old rituals, okay, now they want to talk old. What they say it was religion, but it really is just old style witchcraft. He brings like this whole, this just miasma of the deepest, darkest part of a forest, that you could possibly go into. Just everything about it, like moss and earth and deathy, kind of smells of everything sort of decomposing and decaying back into the earth. But that's kind of like his perfume. Okay, that's the package he comes in. It's not Krampus running up the street, and grabbing children. It's a serious thing because essentially, yeah, it is a serious dark god
On
that comes.
here, it's saying that Santa did not travel alone, nor did he punish the bad children. The job went to his partner, so they're calling him his partner, Krampus. Krampus predates the notion of Santa Claus, Saint Nicholas, by thousands of years, rooted deep into Germanic paganism.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess you had to be pretty damn bad for this guy to show up. I'm just looking at the picture here on this website of him jamming one little child into a basket,
Yeah.
and the other one I guess is okay because she has her apples, so I guess she pleased him. But the whole idea is what's going to happen to those children. It's just such a German thing, and it's not everything that comes out of Germany is really, something we want to just perpetuate now. But there's nothing you can do because there's the people who will do goth Christmas trees, and and I have a lot of that. I share a lot of photos and stuff on Tumblr and Pinterest. It's cool and it's interesting, and when it's done right, it's kind of elegant, even with the black and the, like I was talking to my daughter and talking about how my grandmother, my mother's mother, always had a white phlox tree, and every year she'd do a different color ornament, but it would all be like if it was all red, or all green, it was going to be one color. And I said she would really like the black ornaments and stuff, the drama of it, So I mean, and I can appreciate that, and that's like really modern looking. But this glorifying of this particular thing is, yeah, it's not a good thing. I don't think he has a part in Christmas, but that's just me. Okay, I don't because Santa Claus is the kids' thing, and for me, there's a different reason that Christmas, and they can't pair him obviously can't pair him to Christ, whose birthday it actually is being celebrated. So they, I guess, they stick him with Saint Nicholas. But by the time Santa got over here, we didn't have any of that. That's because American kids are good, that's why.
Yeah. Well, I
They're
see
all
before
good.
that next picture, the following picture after that is in blue and it looks like a werewolf.
Yeah, I see
Well,
that.
the
It
paragraph above that is
is.
telling why Krampus is the werewolf.
There are many more spirits and creatures said to come out at Christmas, both to reward or punish. Oh wait, let's go to the gut. Even above, what is even more terrifying is that Krampus is hardly alone to punish the wicked. There is a legend of, yeah, Frau Perk. I was just reading this, a Germanic wild spirit that appears and to punish bad girls and boys during the 12 days of Christmas, tearing out their insides and replacing them with garbage. Frau Berchta. It's not Perchta, it's Berchta, actually. I just looked at this. And isn't that a wonderful thing? I mean, to be German, right? They're going to come and they're going to tear your insides out. We're going to stuff trash inside of you. I mean, seriously, this is why these people grow up and want to conquer the world. You know, Iceland, though, and I want to go to Iceland. I'm driving a man nuts, but I want to go to Iceland. But I do. It's one of the last really, you know, rugged places on earth. And I'll probably be there 5 minutes. But they have a cat, the Yule cat. It's supposed to come and get naughty boys and girls who did not finish all their chores by the coming Yule. I mean, seriously. From France comes Hans Trapp. I don't know how that came from France. He was a man who said to actually exist at one point in history. He was a hard human being. He took and killed children. I mean, does this have a place in Christmas?
I don't think so.
For adults, maybe.
I don't think it should.
I don't either. There are very dark parts, though, of Christmas. The Frau Bertha. I actually have a book that's called The Book of Christmas. And so I'm opening up the book, the Book of Christmas. Okay. Mm-hmm. Find a nice comfortable spot because I'm going to read you. And there is some serious darkness. And there are different things, different revels that are done and stuff to keep away the spirits. Like on the night of the solstice, in Arthurian legend, they would do the dance of the swords, the dance of the 21 swords. So on the solstice, it was to keep away because you were on this, you know, the 21st of December being the longest night of the year and the shortest day. There's a really big tradition and it goes across different nations, different nationalities and cultures of the dead coming back at Christmas. And a lot of these people or a lot of these peoples would even set a place at the table for their deceased loved ones who had died in the year before, you know, during that year, so that they could come and enjoy, you know, Christmas again. So there's all this, you know, this goes on in the heart of Christmas on the folklore side of it. And we see, you know, the bright red and green, and we see Bing Crosby, we hear Bing Crosby, and we see all of this, and there really is, there's enough darkness, really, in my opinion. That's just me with the Krampus thing. I think I'm just seeing Krampus too much. I'm like, okay, I'm over. Somebody get over Krampus real quick and stop posting this, you know, all over Facebook. But I mean, there's this one thing called the Hodening Horse. The Hodening Horse, he comes from Britain. And let's see, he was played, it was a pantomime horse, but it was based on the real thing. Okay, there was a horse. The Hoden was a jolly Christmas creature, but its past was dark. And it is prancing through the streets on fire with like a head and a mane of fire. So apparently a real thing came down. And then everything that they do, mummers and all of these costumes that they make, they have a kernel of truth in it. At some point in somebody's history, this actually happened. The astrologers will, you know, feel, they point out that, you know, the winter is ruled by cruel Scorpio, that's me, and hunted, wow. I am hunted by the archer Sagittarius and Capricorn. You know, he's a goatfish cavorting close behind. Then they had the ancient breath of Kari, the winter wind, descended cold Norse gods onto the earth. And the gods were black frost, eternal snowbank, snowdrift, and fine driven snow. And then here, old gods haunted the winter skies of Europe, terrifying men and women. In Germany, again, and here this is it. This is Bertha, okay? The hearth goddess Bertha rode the clouds, leading a train of elves and fairies, cradling the ghosts of the infant dead, the infants who had died that year. So it's, you know, it's kind of creepy. Then in Greece, out of the rocks and caves come ghouls and goblins, and I'm not even going to, it's a Kalikatari or something like that, and they tormented honest households where they were keeping Christmas. Then there is the old folklore about going to a graveyard at Christmas. And you can predict the future. You can see the future. In other words, all of the people who will die in the coming year. If you go at midnight on Christmas, you're going to see. But then you may see yourself And you may well be, you know, like the last person in the year. The other thing about that is the last person in the year that dies, it has to be the graveyard keeper. You know what I mean? A ghostly mm-hmm. keeper of the cemetery until he's relieved of, he or she is relieved of his of the duty later. There's a Frau Gaude, another Frau, and she was a winter crone, because this is the, you know, the hag time of the year. This is associated with the hag. Everybody, you know, says maiden, mother, and crone. Well, this is the crone. This is her domain. And so it is, you get a lot of these sort of female figures. She hunts. She's Austrian and hunts with a pack of demon dogs. And if you left your doors open at night on Christmas Eve, she would send in her hounds to devour you. We're gonna have a bell going, ding, ding, Germany, you know. Seriously, they need to get out more. Or get, maybe it's just snowed in that bad. But yeah, I mean, she's, then there's another folklore saying, leave your door unlocked and Santa Claus will come. And so, I mean, what do? You're kind of like damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because if this thing gets to your house before Santa does, you know, well, Santa, he's going to find a bloodbath. The demon dogs have come. The demon dogs Jeez. Of Christmas.
So now, which book would you read to your children? Huh? There's a lot of them.
Which book would I read?
Well, anybody. You know, depending on their character, their kind of people. Like if they have this many folklore books and, you know, back in the old days, you would choose a book to read Christmas carols or Christmas stories to your kids or friends. I guess it depends on the crowd you were hanging with if you were going to pick one of those books.
Well, and it depended too on whether you subscribe to the you know, the tradition or the revived tradition of the British. People find it funny, but A Christmas Carol, which is stating the obvious, that's like really begging the obvious, obviously is a ghost story at its very root. The ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Future is always my favorite. And it's done really either, you know, really well or poorly. There's a couple that are just like, oh, you know, they're not, they just look ridiculous. But there's a couple, there's one one movie, one of the old movies, I think it's the one with Alistair Sims, it's from the 1930s. They did a really good Christmas future. And what he is a hooded monk, or he's, you know, completely, it is completely covered in, you know, just dark black. It looks like a monk's outfit or black draping or a burqa, whatever you want to call it, but you get the general idea. And you don't see, and originally you don't see any part of it, or at least the way it was portrayed. But then in the actual story, you see the hand, you know, pointing out and pointing which way they need to go. So he's always kind of creepy. But Christmas, you know, Christmas present, Scrooge has to hang around with him second. And the whole time he's with him, and if you saw Scrooge, the Jim Carrey movie, you know, they did this one really well, too. The whole time he's with him, he's aging. Not Scrooge, but Christmas is aging until the end, you know, when he's got to turn him over to Christmas future. And, you know, what always kind of struck me, and there was a cartoon version of this that was really good, but when Scrooge looks down and he sees the two children clinging to the legs of, you know, of Santa Claus or the Christmas spirit. It's always when he flings open his robes and you see the two kids, and they're called Ignorance and Want, you know, and they go, that's part of the darkness too. The whole thing is, you know, there's people who are deprived and have nothing. And, you know, in the midst of the most like wonderful season of the year, they have nothing. And this is representative, you know, this is representative of that, I guess, and the dangers that can come from it. But I don't know. Then, you know, the Christmas past, that's always kind of poignant. Well, I don't know. What's your favorite version of the Christmas Carol?
I don't know.
There's a couple on TV.
It brings me back to Fred Sanford and Son.
What? Wait, what?
I don't know. It just stuck in my head. You missed it. Yeah.
Did they have a Christmas special?
Yeah, they. I think it was last year. I had seen it. It was his son Lamont.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Christmas past, present, and future.
Oh, he was. Oh my God.
Yeah. To show Fred what he missed out on, because, you know, if he would have never, because he didn't want to be born, so if he would have never been born, this would have been his life, and yeah, so it kind of changes them all in the end, I guess. Changes
they have all kinds of different versions. There was one that it was an American Christmas Carol, and Henry Winkler was, you know, was the guy, was Scrooge the guy. He was Scrooge. And that, you know, that kind of worked out pretty good. I just can't picture Sam Finson. I had no idea that they did, you know. I'll have to look that up. I'll have to look it up on YouTube and see if I can watch it. The one that I like, I've always liked, is the one with George C. Scott in it. And I actually have DVR'd it so that I can watch, because they don't show it every year. Sometimes they show the one with Patrick Stewart, you know, and he's bald headed. You know, he was Captain Picard. So he's okay, but I really go with the George C. Scott one. So, you know, it's just so Christmassy and everything. But all of that was given to us by Britain, you know, who just kind of incorporated the Christmas tree, was popularized during Victorian times. The whole idea of, you know, the Christmas leaving Santa the treats and stuff like that. It, you know, they just kind of took all of the good, or the, I guess, good or more inspiring stuff. And, you know, they just basically created Christmas for the world, and they kind of put it all together in one thing. So that's where we get the tree and the dreaming of a white Christmas. Down here. Uh-oh. What was that?
That's my dog hollering at my husband with the loud TV. Hold on one second.
All right.
I got it. Come on.
Get out. Wow. Sounds like Krampus is here. You sound like Krampus in the background.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Crump. Yeah. Yeah. That was everybody. That was the Krampus imitation.
Yeah.
That was good. We had an unplanned visiting guest. The only one missing is mine.
I know. I hadn't heard him tonight.
She is sequestered somewhere. Yeah, she's grown, and she's just running around in the snow earlier. We're talking about the Doberman, everybody. The Doberman. But yeah, to wrap that up, just the whole thing of the dark side, that particular dark side of Christmas, there really is, honestly, you know. So there has to be, because in the end, it's like light comes in at the darkest time. You know,
it's a balance.
Well, it is, and it's the balance of the birth of Christ. Now, you know, everybody, that people have problems with that, but, you know, you've got these Wiccans and pagans and Yule, you know, celebrating Yuletide and all that, and it's the Sun King, and he's being reborn in the darkness. Well, you know, whatever. And there's a good amount of, you know, accurate archaeological and anthropological evidence that Christ was actually born in the spring. And there's some giveaways to that too, about, you know, there's something about the stars and when that particular event, they, you know, they kind of postulate that it happened, and the fact that the shepherds were out with their sheep in the fields, which is something they didn't do in winter. They did that in the spring. They mm-hmm. fielded the sheep out there. And so then they had to stay. So then, you know, they've kind of like actually almost find it down to a day. And they have suggested that he was born on or about the 17th of April, you know. So what do you do with Christmas, you know? And this is what you tell people. People say, oh, well, you know, the Christians just stole that away from the pagans and just stole the da-da-da-da. And it's like, we just picked a day to commemorate. And they didn't steal it, at least the evangelizing church. They basically compromised, you know, with what was going on, the traditional festivities of the time, of the 21st of December, you know, the middle of December and the dark heart of the year, the Yule log and all the other things that went along with it were just sort of, they weren't appropriated, but they were included in the story of Christmas. And, you know, they basically said, okay, look, you've got the Sun King, you know, we've got the sun, you know, he's going to, it's going to be December 25th. That's the day we picked to memorialize it. They didn't say this is exactly his day. You know, it's just the day that they chose in the year, you know, in the calendar of the year for us to, you know, memorialize and celebrate that event. Just like Easter, you know, Easter is like, we don't know exactly, you know, when it might have been something different, but it was Passover. So that happens in the spring as well. So they did the same with Easter. They said, well, let's, you know, stick Easter close to this, and, you know, and it worked. But you get these really, you know, these really uptight people saying, the Christians are taking them, and we're supposed to be doing this, and, you know, and eggs and what they symbolize, and bunnies and what they symbolize.
People just have to have something to complain about.
Everybody does.
You can't say anything right. You can't do anything right. And not everything's a debate.
A debate, or somebody stole this, or you're appropriating that, or, you know, it's like, for God's sake, this is
Let's ridiculous. Take this down. Let's not have this in school. Blah, blah, blah.
It's ridiculous.
Now it's happy holidays at Walmart. I'm like, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, Thanksgiving, too, kind of got gobbled up. No pun intended. You know, it just gets slammed in there between Halloween and Christmas. And you get Christmas earlier than ever before, you know? And so it's like I guess, you know, people might need to slow down to real time, you know, in other words, slow the time down and stop. But yeah, you get these people jumping out of the woodworks, especially these, you know, these devout pagan, whatever, you know, y'all stole all of that, blah, 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 you know, frankly, some of this crap that we've been talking about, you can have, okay?
We'll give you Krampus.
You know, you can have Krampus all you want. You can have cramps with Krampus. I mean, you know, on Krampus, 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 you know, because and we're personifying him again, but he doesn't have a place in Christmas. He really doesn't, you know. He does if you're
German. A checkout lady at Walmart last year said, we can't say Merry Christmas. I said, are you kidding me?
Are you serious?
Like, I said, I would walk out of here with a Santa hat on if I worked here.
What do? They tape over like all the Christmas, you know, anything that says Christmas, do they put like a black piece of tape?
No, they can't.
Over
they,
like
can't
Christmas
they can't
cards.
Say it to the customers. So y'all done lost your damn mind.
And business, if that's the case, you know.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's
all about the money,
understand.
Too. You know, they put the things, the holiday items out a month or so before it's even the holiday.
Yeah. I don't mind saying happy holidays, because when I say that, I think of the whole thing, you know, like right after Halloween, it starts and it goes through Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, you know, and King's Day. And then, you know, so it is holidays over a period.
Yeah.
It is a holiday season.
I'll say both.
When
in
I
case.
Mean it, it's not to the exclusion of it. But, you know, Merry Christmas. It is.
It's like you can't walk around and ask people, what is your religion? What is your faith? What do you believe in? You know, you're just greeting them.
Yeah, happy holidays.
I mean, so.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, how's
what
your
you
black
mean?
Cat?
What do you mean by that? You know, I mean, I'd be like, you know, what do you mean? What holiday?
Something to argue about.
I mean, my, you know, the holiday, the day that I take out all my cats and bathe them in a tub and, you know, walk them across the thing to tell the future day, you know, I mean, happy holidays, you know, holiday. Do you know what the word holiday, the root of the word holiday is? Holy day. It's an original root in Middle English, holy day. And it was a holy day of obligation, of which today is one. As a matter of fact, it's the Feast of the Ascension, I believe, or the whatever. I'm sorry. I'm sorry being, it's just been pushed out of my mind, but it is some sort of a holy day of obligation that I had to talk my child out of.
I remember in school, we used to have Christmas trees in our classrooms.
Yeah.
And we'd have, you know, we'd bring a little gift and exchange gifts and things like that.
Now we can't do that.
I don't think
that. They have to have drag queens come in and read books and stuff to them. You know?
Jeez, yeah.
You can't have a Christmas tree, but you got to have this fool up in here. So it's like, you know, so we started talking about the Krampus thing, you know, as this alternative, you know, this evil alternative to the brightness of the season or whatever. You know, it's like people will always follow the darkness. You know, some people, and I shouldn't say that like that. I'm a Scorpio. I'm like the blackest of black doom gloom souls here, you know, and all. But at least at this time of year, it's like, I don't want to see that. I want to see, you know, fruitcakes and listen to Bing Crosby, you know, and think about Santa Claus and talk about snow and stuff that we did. You know, it's a time for looking backward and seeing how far, you know, you've come, man, looking forward.
Being grateful for what you had all year.
Yeah. Because if you look at it around that time, you have a lot to be grateful for, all of us. You know, if you have a roof over your head, and you have heat and electricity and stuff, that this day and age, that's in, you know, a lot of people don't have that. And I will say this, though, there is a lot of generosity out there. There's a lot of people giving. A lot of people right as we speak are losing their homes, their Christmases, the fires in the West. You know, now we've got snowstorms going, you know, through the plains and all this. It's just, why do you want to make it darker, you know?
Right.
Why do you want to say, oh, watch out because this big evil demon thing with, you know, cloven hooves and whatever is going to come get you in the night? That's, you know, any other time of the year, I'd be, yeah, laughing, you know, oh, like in Legend. Oh, it's pixies and fairies and stuff. But not this time of the year. It doesn't, in my opinion.
And don't make your children believe that either.
Right. That's the problem. That's, that's another problem, you know. Why, you know. That's cruel, you know, and then to have to explain it. Well, you know, that's what he does. And in most of the quote unquote legends, he eats the kids, which goes back to pagan, you know, devouring of their young and sacrificing of their young. I mean, it has really deep, dark roots. And before you go Krampusing about, you might want to look into that and see what you're perpetuating. So, but anyway, we're supposed to be taking a break. I don't know where Joe is, so we're just going to kind of go on until he shows up. We're kind of running blind tonight because we don't have a Pal Talk chat room to monitor. So until he messages me, I guess we can just continue talking.
Okay.
I was going to segue after the break, you know, make it real dramatic and all that stuff.
There he is.
There he is.
I was just waiting for you to say you was ready.
Krampus is here, y'all. That's it. Yeah, we're going to take a break. That's the Joe man. And we'll be back in about, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. Stick around because we're going to talk about ghost phone calls and hauntings and creatures in the night on Christmas. Stay there.
Oh, you're clear.
I'm clear. Good. I got to go get some water. I'll be right back.
They got the casinos do a really nice buffet on Christmas and New Year's, and you can go pig out. And for us, because we usually host the holidays. The last 3 years I have, we usually host them. And when we host the holidays, it's always, if we just do dinner, it's $400 or $500. If we do anything else like but about 3 years ago, I was renting a camps up in Bedford, Mississippi, Louisiana state line up there in the National Park. And, you know, it had 4 bedrooms, 2 baths, actually 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, camp, you know, overlooking the gulf. It was beautiful. The family for 3 or 4 days, and everybody gets together. But the trips, that was $1,600, $1,800. Like, and really, You have to buy the food, too. Yeah, everything. I mean, all the furniture, utensils, guitar, everything, any other thing you want, and all your food. But it's nice. I mean, we built fires out there, but then we bought this place. We did a couple up here, but frankly, I like all the damn people in my house. When I was renting, I didn't care, but now that I own a damn place, I'm like, no, y'all stay at home.
Centicord.
Yeah, and really, I've been wanting to go out of town somewhere, like maybe in the Northeast somewhere, because I got some friends up in Boston that asked me to come up and, you know, go do some sleigh riding with them in the snow during Christmas, or come up to Nantucket or somewhere like Connecticut, but... And I don't know. I can't get motivated. And I don't want to spend any money, to be honest with you. I'm trying to get out of debt this year, not in debt. I'm thinking about refinancing my house just so I could pay off all my credit card and pay off my truck. Just have the house though, you know?
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, do that and put a couple $1,000 in the bank, make you feel a little more cushy. That's really... Economy's good, we've been busy, but we're really not booked out. Usually we stay booked out 3-4 months. Right now we're only booked out about a month, month and a half. That always makes me nervous.
Booked out how?
Well, contract. Yeah, we keep stuff booked out. We have maintenance we do for other properties and stuff like that, so that fills in the slower times. But sometimes, you know, you just get hit when there's nothing going on.
Winter times usually slow.
Not, well, it hasn't been since Katrina. Since Katrina, it used to be right after Thanksgiving, first week of December up until about Mardi Gras, we were kind of slow. But since Katrina, we've been busy through the holidays, which is weird. And even this year, we're going to work every week. This week we had a slack week, but it was more because of weather than it was anything else. Did I hear the lead was pregnant? I liked it.
What?
Who's pregnant?
Who did you say was pregnant?
I said that would be a Christmas miracle.
Me? You didn't say me.
Yes,
thank you.
That would be an immaculate conception. An immaculate conception.
Oh Lord. No babies.
No, not just, I just want the kind that I can give back. You know, here, you hold it. I'll hold grandchildren. That's what I want.
You tell my son I want some grandchildren. He's 32 now. I'm like, motherfucker, give me some grandchildren.
He may have.
He ain't going to. He's way more careful than his daddy was. He's like, half them kids in Covington probably belong to me in Mandeville. Shit. Populate the whole damn North Shore.
That explains a lot.
Oh man.
That explains a lot.
You was being a hoe dog.
Oh yeah.
Zeke, calm down.
It was different then, especially.
I don't know.
Back when I had to go to church 3 days a week and shit.
Amanda.
That's weird. I was an annunciation today.
So what are people hearing right now? Music?
They are hearing either your song or the Christmas thing, whichever was playing next. I forgot which one was cued first, but it's something I can tell you. That's because I got the mic open, that's why.
Aisle 9. Clean up and jeez.
What time
Christmas.
Is it?
Christmas is poor this year.
Yeah, this end too.
I'm trying, that's what I was telling Bernie, I'm trying not to spend any money. I mean, we spent $300 or $400 this year, but I mean, usually Christmas is expensive for us. And I have been, every year I've been trying not to spend. So I want to get my credit cards paid off. I would like to go through, you know, get it in the first part of 2018, but the first quarter would be debt free, except for my house.
That would be good. That would be good. I have an article, Bernadine, that I wrote a while ago, and it's called "I'll Be Home for Christmas Haunted by Holiday Ghosts." I have some little things that I highlighted in there. Getting phone calls and stuff at the holiday time, and from dead people.
Yay!
But really, you know, I'm sick of Krampus. I'm really tired of it. You know, it's like, this is ridiculous. Every time you look on, you know, Facebook or anything, it's like Krampus. Sorry.
And they have a costume for him now.
What, that you can wear?
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
Did you see at the end of the article I sent you?
Well, I didn't get, I was looking at the pictures. I saw the two gay guys.
It's right above that.
These two gay guys look like twins.
They have Krampus, I can't say the name of it, in Bavaria in 2013. Yeah, it's a picture of a guy just like that.
Oh, God. Anthony and Ben. I don't see that picture, though.
You sent me a Terminus for tonight?
Yeah, it's a redo. I'm saying,
I don't know what happened last week, but that one went and played for crap.
Last week?
Yeah, it wouldn't play. You didn't see it, didn't get archived, yeah. I meant to tell you last week and I forgot. I was going to hit you. I was up at 2. I said, I ought to text her ass and tell her to come fix it.
What? None of it played at all?
No, it started, and you know how you do your intro, and it started like it normally does, and then it was like nothing else was there. What the hell? Usually it works great.
Mercury retrograde. I'm telling you, we're in a Mercury retrograde.
Another computer. We will be. Now, as I was telling that night, if we use any more computers from this point forward, we lose audience. It fucking sucks, you know. We're on the back now. Oh, just tight now. No more passes.
Well, I see that picture. You see, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Look, you catch on fire.
You know?
Really sorry about this. Maybe we're old. You know? But it's the time of the year to be old.
We could just stay in the cold weather in our pajamas at home.
I was just looking out. There's still snow on the roof. I mean...
Yeah, y'all probably had
around.
It was pretty thick in Slidell, but like up in Diamond Head, it was way thick. Sam, my business partner, told me he's only had 3 inches in Jordan. He's only 4 miles from me.
Actually pushed off like three or four inches off the car.
I did 4 videos driving. I think it was like the second or third one is really good. I mean, you can see we're like driving in a freaking blizzard. not the worst one I've ever been in. The worst one I've ever been in was coming out. I was in the fucking mountains in Virginia in springtime. It was like, Lord, it was sticking to the window so fast you couldn't see anything. Everybody was thinking it was 70.
We can't drive down here. You know, if it's drizzly or something, there were people, you know.
They close the door.
Because it now see tomorrow it's gonna be dangerous because it's gonna be ice in March. Today it was just
because it was wet. But it's gonna freeze overnight.
All right, we will pause. Let's release the microphone. Let's pick up the new microphone. And why am I seeing that thing moving? I'm gonna go check it. Anyway, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we are back.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Krampus Radio Hour. this is the Supernatural Substation. Joe is trying to disconnect. Just let it go. Mercury retrograde, folks. I'm telling you, look at your calendar. You got all kind of crazy things going on. Mercury retrograde. If your phone's not working and your computer's not working, then that's who you can, at least there's something to blame or somebody, depending on your belief system. So you're back with the supernatural substation, and you may have had dogs, but I have the holiday cats yowling to get out of the room. So pardon us, the live radio folks. So we were talking in the last hour about the dark part of Christmas, the dark part of the year. And while on the break, Bernadine sent me a picture of a guy in a Krampus costume at a parade. You know, and I can tell you this is, and I'm not going to, I guess I'm going to move on from this one. I'm just going to say, this is a recent acquisition. It may have been familiar in Europe, but this is just sort of exploded with the usual stupidity.
Yeah.
The usual amount of overkill that we do everything in America with. But, you know, there is, there's a whole other side. When you're talking about how A Christmas Carol is a ghost story, and the British loved their ghost stories. They would, and they told them at Christmas. It just was part of the tradition. It wasn't always A Christmas Carol that they read, but they all had ghost stories, and it seemed like, you know, the perfect time to them to share it. And I guess so, because there are traditions, like we were saying, of, you know, the dead returning. And if you look into the solstice, the 21st of December, in the really traditional, or, you know, sort of very, I don't want to say primordial, but very old associations with darkness that it has in the time, it's another time of the year, like Halloween, where the veil gets very thin. It's the bleak midwinter. It's, you know, the darkest time of the year, and every spirit is drawn to something. And most of what you'll find, like, you know, we're moving into modern stuff, into more modern stuff, but you'll find, you know, the ghost of people who have passed, that, you know, your loved ones, sometimes sighted out of the corner of your eye at Christmas, or they're drawn to, instead of evil, they're drawn to the warmth and the gathering of family that they are departed from physically, but that they can still experience. And of course, not everybody, you know, everybody's old uncle, whatever, Uncle Ebenezer might not have been so nice. So he may still come back, you know, to like pinch somebody or whatever. But, you know, most of the associations with people experiencing relatives returning are, you know, touching and sentimental. And I don't know if you have any stories about it, Bernadine, if you've ever had an experience like that or heard of somebody experiencing that.
The only one that I've had was with my grandfather around Christmas time, right before he passed. His, my step-grandmother was at home. I think I told the story before. He was in the hospital, and she had wanted her fireplace moved so she could put her Christmas tree in front of the window.
Mm-hmm.
But he got put in the hospital before he could find someone to move it because it was really heavy. Yeah. And while he was in the hospital, he hadn't passed yet, but his spirit and another guy, spirit that she couldn't see his face, actually moved it. So she called, and she called my mom. I was there. I had slept there that night, and she was, you know, really upset because she thought he passed, because she seen his spirit and the other spirit moving the fireplace.
Oh, wow.
So my mom called the hospital so they could check on him, and they said he was fine. He was just sleeping. So I don't know if the spirit, you know, if he just, in his dream state, maybe wanted do that one last thing so she can put her Christmas tree up.
Yeah. He slipped into some sort of an astral type, you know.
Well, we always, you know, say that right before you pass, you have 1 foot in the grave, which means you're already transitioning to the other side. So maybe his spirit was out of his body at that time, maybe out of body experience. But the faceless guy, she found out later, was a cousin of ours that lived in Texas that had got a bad auto accident and died. And they couldn't recognize him because his face was messed up so bad.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
But the other spirit did, right? Recognized him and said, come here. I want to move this.
Well, I'm pretty sure
this
they were
fireplace.
Kids.
Yeah. Come over here and help me with that. So you see folks, you know, if you would drive a truck on the other side, they're still going to call you to move stuff too.
That's right.
It's like owning a van on the spirit side.
Well, they say that you work on the other side. Once you get there, you have your own jobs, you know.
I don't want to work.
Me neither.
There might be a beach on the other side too. I ain't working. But following on to that, families have experienced unexplained knocks at the door on Christmas Eve, the appearance of lovingly hand-tooled toys and crafts, even the mysterious consumption of large quantities of mulled Christmas wine or other beverages, and they're all events that have come down through generations as linked to the special time of year. I'm reading from an article that I wrote called I'll Be Home for Christmas Haunted by Holiday Ghosts. So people have found toys and gifts they didn't expect. We've seen that dramatized on TV, you know, the last gift hidden over there. You know, it's like, who put that? And then, you know, something that whatever, you know, the dead grandfather promised or the dead mom or whatever. You know, so we've seen that a lot. And it's not just sentimentality. I mean, obviously, they were doing hard labor moving a floor furnace, you know, or what is it, a heater or a fireplace?
It was one of them movable fireplaces.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know that. Well, that's great, because I was thinking, that's hard labor moving all the metal.
Yeah. No, it's not the one that has real fire. It's electronic. It lights
up. Okay,
like
I know. What you're talking, I know. Yeah. Which, yeah. Well, I mean, some people think that, you know, the rules of, and I put that in quotations, like the general rules of us not being able to interact with spirits, except, you know, randomly, or if you're researching, you know, you're an investigator and you're putting yourself in contact. It's kind of like, you know, the same around Samhain or Halloween, where it's, you know, they kind of relax the rules a bit. And allow, you know, spirits to come and go and basically enjoy, you know, the love and feel the love that they, that they miss or that they've left behind. But it's different when, you get a phone call,
right.
You know, it's a little different. And, in the story, I'm going to go ahead and read this one because it has to do with Christmas. It's a Christmas phone call from the dead. My mother passed away 3 years ago. We were very close and I miss her daily. Last Christmas evening, I went to bed and woke up to the phone ringing. I answered it and a voice that was very familiar to me said, "Hello there." It was my mother's voice. The line had a static noise and it sounded to cut in and out. I said, "This can't be you, Mom. You're dead." She said, "Oh, come on now." She sounded a bit agitated, and then we were cut off. My 16-year-old daughter was sleeping in the next room and also heard the phone ring that night. I know it was my mother's voice. She had a Norwegian accent, and it was her. Kind of creepy. That's creepy any time of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and but it happens a lot more than people think. A lot. I mean, I've heard people having issues with cell phones, you know, landlines are especially prone to it. And I guess because, you know, it's a hardwired phone, so it's a little bit difficult, but they can still, you know, communicate. Others have, you know, had computer messages come from nowhere, or, you know, from somebody's account that's just still out there who had died, you know. And usually it's not like, you know, coming to terrify somebody at Christmas time. And so it may be, you know, it may be true that all of that kind of you know, the kind of happiness keeps away sort of the ones that would, you know, interact negatively. And it's never a bad thing to have all your, you know, your family alive or dead, right, around for protection and everything. So, you know, it might be a good thing when they're showing up. It shows you that, you know, there's not necessarily evil or evildoers hanging around. You know what I mean?
Yep. And they can manipulate electronics, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can. Yeah. Although I don't know if anybody's gotten a Merry Christmas yet, you know, but it's possible.
You never know. But they do visit on holidays and birthdays, you know, things like that, special occasions, births of children. Well, that's where a lot of people have gotten apparition photos from, too, you know, like family reunions, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they come back and they wrap gifts. And there's another story that I included in here about a woman who said that, you know, her, they always watched Christmas movies to, you know, together as a family. Mm-hmm. And her mother had passed. And well, her father had already passed. So her mother, she kind of like, it was right before Christmas, the mother passed. And so she was very, and the mother always liked that movie, White Christmas. You know, the Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye one. And she had closed the room, the mother's room, you know, hadn't gone in there really yet to deal with anything. And she was thinking about it, you know, when the movie was, you know, Christmas was coming, she was thinking of all the things she used to do. And she, one night she heard, this is, you know, this sounds weird, but she heard Bing Crosby singing in her mother's room. And, you know, it was, he was singing White Christmas. You know, and it wasn't, the movie wasn't on TV. The TV didn't come on, but it was playing in her mother's room. When she opened the door, obviously it stopped. But then she, you know, she thought about it and she's like, she felt like that was her mother, you know, letting her know that she was there, because it was really beginning to depress her, you know, obviously. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the kind of things that, you know, can just, you know, I guess, get you through if you lose someone close to the holidays. Of course, my dad died the week of Thanksgiving. And as far as I know, you know, he hasn't, he's probably been around, but he hasn't made his presence known, you know, because I'm sure he's too busy enjoying where he's at to be worried about it. But it, you know, it can obviously put a damper, you know, on everything. So in a way, it's kind of comforting if they do send you a message. You know, there is some way for them to come back.
Even a song on the radio sometimes when you're thinking about somebody and that was y'all's favorite song, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I was looking further in this this article that I had written. And the next part is Ghostly Bells at Christmas. In England, for example, there have been many reports of the sound of bells ringing out on Christmas night from the sites of monasteries and cloisters destroyed in Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries in 1539. During the destruction of Evesham Abbey, the huge church bells were cast into the nearby river. In the succeeding years, there have been several reports of the sound of bells resonating under the water on Christmas Eve night. Take that, Henry VIII. Take that. We're still going to ring the bells. Others where villages were wiped out by plague, where there were barely stones standing, and yet they could hear music and dancing and singing, you know, celebrating the Christmas time where the village once was and nobody was there. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. And there's modern instances as well. I'm sorry. Water, man's best friend. So do you have any more recent ones? This is sort of like in folklore. You have any more recent ones that you've heard of or that you've looked at?
No.
Friend, there's people have seen people on the road walking to their homes. You know, they're walking, they're driving, and they'll see somebody familiar walking along. as if they're going to the same house. They'll even wave. And then you realize who it was, and you look back and they were dead. So it is the time when everybody's drawn there. And you can remember, I don't know, you may, maybe there's like this this parallel world where it's all still going on, you know?
Yeah.
Where somewhere I'm sitting at my grandmother's table on the quiet Christmas Eve. When I was little, we had to go see my mother's mother because it was not full on Christmas at her house. So we went on Christmas Eve, her mother and father. And it was quiet. It was always quiet, and they didn't have a lot going on. And when you're like 6 or 7 years old, I mean, this is really boring because, you know, Santa Claus is coming. Mm-hmm. And I remember she used to have those hard candies that everybody gets that time of the year, and they would all stick together, you know.
Yeah, because of the heat.
Well, yeah, or whatever, you know, they'd be in this dish and look like they were there since last year, you know. Yeah, really. It's like, I don't want any of that candy. And we'd get gifts, I guess, and then we'd go back to where we lived. We all kind of lived in one block in the city. And then my dad's family would have a big Christmas Eve party. And it was a big house, but there was shotgun style in the inside, basically. And there was, we used to drive them nuts. I mean, all the old people, or we say old people, but all of our aunts and stuff. You remember floor furnaces, you know,
yeah,
on the floor. If you're familiar with New Orleans shotgun houses, usually they had these floor furnaces at like one or two spots in the house, and they really did heat, you know, they really could heat one side of the house. So we would, when it was on, which was a few Christmases. One, all I had to do it was once to run on it. I don't like shoes. When I was little, I'd take off my shoes and socks as soon as I possibly could. And so I ran until one day when, or one Christmas Eve night, when I ran on a floor furnace, I had the little grid line on my foot. Oh, you know, it was hot. And she used to scream at us, my nanny, stop it, run out of thing. Well, you know, after I got ice put on it and all that, but when it wasn't cold enough for that, then we aggravate her by jumping over it, or, you know, jumping on it. And so, you know, it sounds boring, but after I got burned like that, I was like, I'm a little gun shy on this. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to do this again. And there was one Christmas where, oh my gosh, all the men sort of generated to the kitchen, I guess, because that's where all the alcohol was. You know, the guys would all sit in there and talk around the kitchen table and all. And my brother and my cousin Trudy, they went around the corner to her older sister's house where they were hiding gifts for my younger cousin Tammy. And they had been in the kitchen all night, and they've been drinking like what was left in the glasses, you know, like a little bit of highball here, a little beer, and somehow they got hold of a cigar, and they went over and my brother rode the new bike that Santa, quote unquote, was supposed to bring Tammy. He rode it down the front steps and busted it all up.
Oh my goodness.
Like, oh my god. I mean, that kind of lives. It's high up there on the remember, you know, because they were both. Sammy didn't get a bike that year, but then they said they got sick. And I was like, well, you know, it serves you right. I mean, you ruined Christmas, went over there and opened gifts and destroyed a bike, you know, but that's how much, you know, nobody really knew what was going on with the kids. And we go over to the other side, you know, and the house on the other side, and we eat stuff over there. I mean, it was just, you know, so all of that. And there were people who weren't with us, you know, people who were, and then over the years they would pass away. And then eventually the whole thing kind of moved to my house, in our house anyway, in Eastern New Orleans, which was an interesting thing too, because the house was haunted as hell. But when Christmas came around, it really did feel a whole lot lighter. It, you know, once you put the tree up and you just had that, you know, that uplifted sort of feeling, it did change the atmosphere a little bit. I think it actually drove away or pushed back on some of the, you know, the negativity that was lingering there. So we did. We had Christmas for years and years until everyone starts dying, you know, and then it's not, you know, you don't do it anymore. But I noticed, I mean, there was a real lull instead of an increase in activity. There's a real lull in it, you know, when there was time where everybody was getting along and, you know, all focused on the activities and wrapping packages and, you know, the whole nine yards, everything that goes with Christmas. So, you know, I guess there's truth to it, you know, positive attitude or whatever. But it would come back, you know, it'd come back even
after
worse.
Christmas.
After Christmas, yeah. That would be the next book, after Christmas. And then, dot, 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 you know, it's like, yeah, we're going to come back with gangbusters and make you pay for putting up that Christmas tree and playing Bing Crosby. It was like the, you know, the god of Christmas. That's still like the highest selling song or the biggest number of records, whatever sold. Oh, you know, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this at the top of the show. It's a, John Lennon is dead 37 years today. Wow. 37 years. Like, I mean, it's like, I remember where I was.
That flew by.
I know. It seems almost like yesterday. But it's terrible. I'm 37 to even think. You know, I don't know. Lennon was my favorite Beatle. I don't know. They should have killed that guy that did it. But anyway, we're kind of, before we get off the show, I just wanted to mention that. So I was looking at, in this article that I wrote, I was looking at the fetish, you know, not a voodoo doll, quote unquote, but you kind of associate a quote-unquote voodoo doll with Halloween, let's say, okay? But Christmas, it has its fetish, too. And I sort of feel like it is the Nutcracker, you know, the Nutcracker doll that you see every year, and they do the ballet. And I've been to several different versions of that, from amateur children, in which my own kid, you know, was... or my nieces or whatever. And then the actual like Broadway style. And I've seen so many of them in between. And this kind of brings it back to the dark thing, because we see the whole story. Grimm, again, the brothers Grimm were involved in sort of like the, you know, the rudiment. You're going to hear a dog in the background. They were involved in sort of like the skeleton bones of it. They kind of lapsed over with some Russian overtones or some Russian folklore. But when they were going around collecting their stories, the brothers Grimm came across, you know, the homes where they had these decorative nut biters is what they were. And they were like, you know, some of them were shaped like animals and whatever, and they would crack the nuts. And, you know, they were utilitarian, but they were also like raised up to like a craft. A lot of people would paint them, and then you get, you know, the Nutcracker doll. So it became familiar, you know, as sort of like every German home or most homes had something of the sort. And so when they began, there she is. There's the hound of hell, Christmas hell. when it came around to do, you know, it's where it was created into the Nutcracker ballet. Tchaikovsky. Let's see. I'm going to back up because there's something interesting here. The Christmas Nutcracker doll began its life in 1816 in a play entitled The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, written by German writer E.T.A. Hoffmann, the tale of an unhappy girl named Marie, whose only love was a Nutcracker doll. In 1845, French novelist Alexandre Dumas adapted the play into a story more suitable for children. Took a French guy. And in 1891, this happier version of the story was chosen as the basis of the Russian ballet scored by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. The ballet opened in St. Petersburg on December 17, 1892. So most people know the story, right? Do you know the story of the Nutcracker?
Nope.
See, y'all, Bernadine's a perfect foil. We really don't plan this ahead. We just kind of, huh, do you know that? No. well, by this time, the girl's name was changed from Marie to Clara. And there is a clockmaker who is also her godfather in some, or her uncle in another one. And he's like really mysterious. He's sort of like the alchemist, or, you know, maybe he does magic. And we've got sound effects in the background. Can you
hear? They're singing Christmas carols.
La, 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 la. Yes. So he shows up at a party. I'm thinking I'm going to go stand outside in the snow. He shows up at a party with a nutcracker doll as a present for Clara, and he gives her to Clara. And then everybody gets their presents, and people dance, and they keep dancing, you know, and then the night ends. And she falls asleep under the Christmas tree with the nutcracker doll, which apparently she really likes. During the night, she has a dream this is really, really going south quick because of that dog, but I love it. I can listen to this. We're going to listen to this archive forever. She falls asleep, and then there's a battle between the toy soldiers and the mouse king and his mice. Sounds like we need LSD for that. And the mouse king was winning when all of a sudden the nutcracker turns into a real live thing, a real live person or whatever. And whatever, fights the rat king and then kills the rat king, and the mice all run away. And in the meantime, Clara has shrunk down basically to the size of, you know, toys, and she's on the same level. So they go on this adventure. They go see the Snow Queen, they go see the sugar plum fairies dancing. Everybody's happy. She's in love with her prince. The whole thing turns out to be a dream, right? And so in the version that you will see today, she wakes up. It's a dream. She still has her nutcracker doll, the Christmas fetish. In the actual version, I guess this would be like the Krampus version, the Krampus-style version. She stays small, right? And she's stuck in the toy world forever.
Wow. Now,
the German twist. She can't grow up, you know, back to big size, back to her full size. Can't do it. And she's stuck in a dollhouse or, you know, with all the little toy soldiers and her nutcracker prince forever. So we don't hear that part. We do not hear it, you know, at all. They obviously don't cast that in the ballet version or in the versions that we have seen. So there it is. No, the dog has stopped. Just because I'm finished telling the story, the dog finally stops. You know, I'm going to make this dog a mascot of something. At any rate, so yeah, it's a little bit more creepy, or a little bit creepier, sorry, when you go back to the roots of it. And of course, if it's German, it's going to end up being, you know, yes, the child doesn't grow back up. It stays in the doll world forever, entrapped in this dollhouse world of, you know, and then it's deliberately done by Drosselmeyer, who is her godfather / uncle, whatever he is. So it's kind of like this pedophilia overtones to it, too.
Ew.
All they needed was Krampus to show up.
Do you think one day they're going to have a story in America about Elf on the Shelf?
Oh, Elf on the Shelf. We can't leave him out.
No.
Elf on the Shelf. They already do, don't they? Isn't there?
I don't know.
You're supposed
to,
like,
he's an evil little booger. I don't have the little kids, so I don't know.
I was looking online. I love the pictures where it's like, you know, there's one where he's scaring a little boy, and the little boy is screaming in the background. Like, you know, okay, Elf on the Shelf. It's supposed to move around, and you're supposed to take pictures of it for the 12 days. Because I have no clue. Really, I have no.
So kids young really children. Think it moves by itself.
I think that's it. Yeah.
If they don't do good or whatever, just like Krampus, then they don't get to see the Elf on the Shelf the following week.
I don't know.
I have no idea. I know the parents moved the darn thing here and there.
Yeah, because I saw somebody, a friend of mine on Facebook, said, "Oh my God, I forgot to move the Elf on the Shelf." It's like, yeah. Oh, okay.
something extra to remember. And I was disappointed
to know that they weren't moving by themselves. You know, I was like, oh, somebody has to move them in my house. It would move by itself.
Now, that would be a wicked video to have a video cam or a baby cam or something and see the elf on the shelf moving by itself.
There probably is one, Bernadine, on YouTube. And guess what? It came from Asia or Latin America.
Yeah, we're going to find it.
People always play that. You know, they always put these videos on and they're like, look at this, you know. And I'm like, look, rule of thumb, if it comes from anywhere in Asia, our Africa, our Latin America, forget it, okay? And possibly Russia, Eastern Europe. This is all fake. Is it real? Is it fake? I think this, you know. It's like, it's fake. You know? That's all they do. He's the same Japanese girl and all, you know, whatever. But the elf on the shelf, yeah, I think the parents have to, they have to move it around or whatever. I'm going to look this up right now. So.
But it's making the children think that the thing is alive.
Yeah. And maybe it comes to life.
So how is that good? I'm not understanding. I mean, we don't have grandchildren, so we don't know these things. So
I know.
People out there, if y'all know, if the elf on the shelf is haunted.
All right. What is the elf on the shelf tradition? Here we go. It's better than wanting a hippopotamus for Christmas.
Right.
How does the elf on the shelf, a Christmas tradition? No, it isn't. Okay, supposedly, how does Santa really know who is naughty and nice? The answer is finally revealed in The Elf on the Shelf. Oh, so the elf is a spy for Santa.
Right.
That's what it is, the elf on the shelf. It's to enhance kids' belief in Santa, elves, and Christmas. If a child gets an elf, you can find them online. I'm thinking we actually threw out a couple of these things. If you have an original one, like from the 50s and stuff, they're, well, vintage, I would say, they're worth money now. So I don't know. I think I'd probably sell the elf on the show. Each night you sprinkle snowflakes on your elf to make him come alive. Every morning you're surprised to find what your elf has done. Played video. Okay, so it's not just moving. Played video games, ate popcorn, played with the dogs, not in my house.
Oh, or it's cat, intelligent. Cats. Yeah.
The cats, right. Your elf stays with you until Christmas Eve when he leaves. And then I guess he goes off with Santa and comes again. There are so many memes about this thing. And I don't know about you, but I don't want an elf on the shelf moving around. Your house or my house, it's going to move on its own, right?
Our dogs will eat the elf.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't last. I'm running out of space to put just the basic Christmas decorations over here. For me to put that in here, too. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should get one, tear one up, and put a bunch of ketchup and all.
So, yeah. You know,
this is the elf on the shelf and four cats. This is what the cats can do. To me, that's another one of those, oh my God, you know. And I guess I got to lose this, oh my God, you know, if I do become a grandmother. It's going to be like, yeah, I got to be excited about this, you know. Like, oh God, you know.
I see the future of the elf on the shelf. They're going to be a good elf on the shelf, and then there's going to be a Krampus elf on the shelf.
There is. I think there already is a bad elf, but here's someone who's, you know, saying it's, I don't think I understood it very well when I got it. It's just kind of creepy to me. It's, yeah. And to me, personally, it's like up in there with Furbies, right?
Yeah.
It's, oh, and my whole screen collapsed into a dating site. That's wonderful. Date men your own age. No, I refuse to. Yeah, that's, and here again, that's, they say it's a tradition. These are really recent traditions. I mean, they're
I've never heard of it for the last couple of years.
Well, you've got to start them somewhere and they've got to start somehow. But when they bridge this stuff, you know, that's sort of distant and they bring it into this time, the elf on the shelf thing, I think belongs to just the modern era. I don't know who or how it started, but they didn't appear until like the 30s. Just looking at, you know, some info and some of the collections and stuff, there were examples of them in the 30s and onward. And then they really kind of took off in the 50s and 60s. Because I remember I had my mother had one that sat on a bell, like a big jingle bell. And I don't know what happened to it. I don't know where it went to. Some of them were really cheaply made, but that's, you know, so it's 50s, 60s where it really kind of got, you know, became a popular addition to Christmas. So then in the last few years, all of a sudden it's the elf on the shelf tradition.
And I'm sure they made lots of money.
Well, it becomes a tradition because people start doing it on the internet, and then all of a sudden, and then they add this whole backstory. And again, it's like Krampus, you know, we've only just seen him kind of, you know, explode on. Now we're dealing with this elf that moves around, you know, mm-hmm. No, not in my house. I mean, there are some memes, you know, where there's a cute one where an elf on a shelf has like a hair groomer or a hair razor and shaves out a big old chunk of somebody's head, you know, say who's on the shelf now, whatever, you know, so they have a lot of cute memes about it, but I don't know people, you know, it's just one of those things like reindeer food. Like when my daughter was young and she was in grade school, they every year at Christmas she'd come home with a bag of reindeer food. It would be like oatmeal or something in these cheesecloth type bags, so that by, you know, within a day it was all coming out, you know, and it was like, we've got a long wait if you're going to feed reindeer. I guess we're in South Louisiana and reindeer are in Finland. Okay. It's or the North Pole, right? The North Pole. So I guess the elf thing is the whole thing, but I just don't need to add something else to go, oh, I forgot to move the elf. I don't need that. You know, oh God. I
got, and we still have the cookies for Santa and the milk. Cookies and milk.
That don't last because I have cats and dogs. But, you know, in Louisiana, we have our own fetish. We have our own Christmas fetish. And you know who that is, right? Come on. You know who it is. Mr. Bingle. It's Mr. Bingle.
I don't know him.
It's because you're not from New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
You never saw the little snowman with the, he's really popular with the ice cream cone.
Oh, yeah. You had him on your profile picture for a while.
Yeah, it's Mr. Bingle. Jingle, jangle, jingle. Here comes Mr. Bingle. Yeah, I have a Mr. Bingle that's old, believe me, because I got it when I was like 3 years old, three or four. And just take my word for it. He's old, okay? But he's still hanging in there. Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing about him... There was a department store, New Orleans department store, that used to have these, well, there were a couple of them, but Maison Blanche is what it was called. And they had a Canal Street location. They had these beautiful decorations. Like they have, just like you see sometimes in some of the Christmas music movies, rather, where they'd have the train set and then have the Santa, you know, movable elves. It was just not, and he was in there like a puppet, kind of. And there was, they had their own little area where he would, you know, you couldn't hear what he was saying. Music was playing and all. And for somehow or another, he got like a very short, like, TV show, like on a kids. There was some kind of kids cartoon hour or something. And they would play him, his little whatever, right before, you know, the show would start. And so kids would wait to see Mr. Bingle, you know, jingle, jangle, jingle. And he'd be, hi, boys and girls. And he was still the puppet. But he just became so popular to now, if you go to Celebration in the Oaks in City Park, they have this ginormous Mr. Bingle. It is the Mr. Bingle that used to hang on the outside of Maison Blanche, and they've refinished it and they, you know, they've restored it to what it was. And it's enormous. I mean, you don't really realize how big it is until you see it. So it's like, he is like the fetish of New Orleans. He's like the whole thing, you know, and the 12 yachts of Christmas. Don't forget that. But so, I mean, everybody's, and then, you know, I've got all different types of Mr. Bingle stuff now because different stores have bought them, but I have an original one and he still has his candy cane.
Well, keep that for your grandbaby one day.
And he never came alive because he was a Christmas thing. So, which is, you know, sad to say, I guess, in a way, a lot of people who are tormented by, you know, by evil spirits and negative things and these things that we encounter, you know, as researchers and stuff. They, you know, they really do get a break, I think. Not all of them, and not all in the same way, but I think that around this time of the year, it, you know, it pushes back against the fear of living in a haunted house or dealing with negative entities or whatever you have going on. It kind of pushes back on, you know, the world and everything. It's like this little time. I don't know. Do you agree that, it can?
Well, it can, but unless you're watching Destination America, 12 Days to Christmas, like we do, you know.
Yeah, but they actually had that commercial. I was like, hey, that's a pretty good song. Whoever came up with that was like, that's pretty creative. Yeah, I guess that's sort of like, yeah. No, it's on 24/7. I don't know why they just don't change the name of the channel to Destination Paranormal, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
December
5
golden. December 20th is going to be playing 12 13
days.
13 days
of a haunted. Of a haunted.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, if you're living,
so they have to add something for Christmas on a haunted chantel, you know.
Yeah, well, for sure. And then, you know, you got all the movies the night before Christmas, the Bloody Axe movies and stuff like that. But in general, the joy of the season can, you know, it can lighten it up. But no, not in a house where you've got, you know, 24/7, you know. And then, you know, in the middle of the night, it's like barbecue pit masters and an infomercial. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, I can't look at another episode of Haunted Collector. No. You know, I keep putting it on hoping something's going to change, but it won't. Oh, God.
Maybe in 2018, it'll change.
No. Winter is here now, as they say in Game of Thrones. But you're right now. I mean, but there is, at least in my experience, you know, there was a little respite around this time of year, but it just kind of went away.
What you make of it?
I think it withdraws a little bit and then it ponders what to do, you know, and you're not antagonizing. So I guess, I mean, I hope so, because there are a lot of people that, are living with some pretty bad stuff, you know,
and I know a lot of people living with pretty bad stuff that are in good spirits,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I know a lot of people that have
all
a lot
your
of
friends
stuff
are weird.
That are in bad spirits. Yeah.
We should move them around like the elf on the shelf. Tell them you go over here and live, and then you'll see what it is to be happy. Go live over here.
Be grateful
and on a final
note,
on a final note that has nothing to do with anything at all, Zach Bagans bought the Dybbuk box.
I know. Is he going to decorate it for Christmas?
No, it's going to go in his museum in Las Vegas. The way it was pieced together was, I was watching Evil Things, which is on Destination America, and they were doing the Dybbuk box one, and basically they kind of, I don't know. We'll have to ask the guy back and have him on the show. But eventually they told the story about, you know, I think it was the first guy, and they kind of got it mixed up with the owner that just sold it, but whatever. Anyway, at the end, it says it was recently bought. And then it so happened I was watching Paranormal Witness like yesterday, and that episode came on, the Dybbuk box. And the guy that we had on the show said, I'll never sell it.
Oh.
I was like, what?
You know, uh-huh. If
we'd have known. Until Zach Bagans comes and says, I'll pay you whatever, $1 million or whatever. So he got that. I wonder if he's going to destroy it like he did the demon house, the alleged demon house that he bought and tore down. But
we'll see what his future holds.
Tacking on a little bit of that scuttlebutt at the end of the show. So anyway, we have rambled through the kind of gray area of Christmas. We haven't really gotten that dark. Like, we left out the sacrifices and the baby sacrifices and blood and all that good stuff. So we just left it out. We didn't think it was appropriate. But anyway, we'll be back next week. We have a guest. I don't know who it is.
We have James Anito.
James, yes. James Anito, who we met at, Gulf Coast Paracon.
He's the founder of Dominion Ministry. He's a demonologist.
Very good. So I look forward to talking to him, and everybody else should look forward and join us again next Friday night. Dean, if you've got anything to add, go ahead.
You can find me on Facebook under Bernadine LeBlanc, or email me if you have any paranormal problems. Bernadine, BERNADINE, at LSPR-Society.com.
And you can also find her and I on Facebook at the Supernatural Substation. Go in and like our page. And please go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's getting there. We're getting our stuff over there. Also, UPRN's YouTube channel, sorry. We'll have all the archives for you of our shows and every other show on the network. You want to get in touch with me, you can do it through Facebook. I'm easy to find. Sometimes, unfortunately. No, you can message me on Facebook or go to my site. Books make great Christmas presents. Remember that. Haunting Tales of Old New Orleans or Risks Incidental, which is a nonfiction about ghost hunting, at www.ElleneCastanio.net. Go there. If you go there, I get it. I will sign it and send it to you. So just in case. And I think that wraps it up. Stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski, Quantum Leap. We're going to leap and get high, which at this point sounds really good. She's coming up later tonight, Terminus at 2 a.m. Stay up, get creepy. We're doing a redo because of all the snow day down here. We're spelling it S-N-E-A-U-X because we're in Louisiana. So I pulled out At the Mountains of Madness for you. Some creepy stuff happening out there in the Antarctic. So stay up, get creeped out. We are the Supernatural Substation. We will talk to you next week. You've been listening to us on the United Public Radio Network and iHeart Radio Partner. Have a wonderful weekend and more Christmas cheer coming soon.